Good day and welcome to RENMAX Weekly Survival Guides to the Markets. I'm Jeff DeGraff, and this is April Fool's 2011. No joke for us. I got a terrible head cold, so I'm going to cover these topics in an audio, not the usual video file that we have. But a couple things that we're going to cover. First, are average volumes a problem for this trend? Secondly, what's behind the euro's strength? And then finally, is energy overowned in this environment? If you take a look at page 2, we'll show that the S&P trend model is still positive. The only deterioration that we had was in trend following number 3. That was the most sensitive, or is the most sensitive, so not a big surprise that that would be the first to deteriorate in the weakness over the last couple weeks. But frankly, most likely it will consolidate, will move higher, and this will turn positive again. Most comforting for us is page 3, which is the fact that the internal trends, the percentage of names within the S&P 500 that have their 50-day moving average above their 200-day moving average, is still at 91.4%. Not only is that a firm number, but it also has not been diverging. You can see that back in 2007, back in 2010, we had periods where this indication was diverging while the market was moving higher, suggesting some vulnerability to the overall market's positioning. And that's just not the case here. So, you know, until you see divergences, the market's usually in pretty firm footing, and corrections just tend to be that, corrections within the ongoing uptrend, and we're pretty comfortable with that. Page 4 shows volume, and I know that there's been a lot of discussion about volumes recently, that the weak volumes portend that this is a weak market and that we're due for setup or failure. I just don't buy that. I know Edwards and McGee wrote about volumes back 80 years ago. I know there's a big contingent that believes in volumes for the strength of the market, but we've just never been able to prove that volumes actually matter. What it looks to us is that volumes, particularly in trend, tend to be relatively average, but they tend to surge around turning points. And so for us, when we look at just this average to below average volumes as we're coming out of this, it just doesn't really bother us. Now, if it was a momentum market, we would want to see good volumes. But we understand that this is not a momentum market, and with that, we don't believe that it's that important. If you go back and look at April, May, June of 2009, you'll see that the majority of days had volumes that were running well below their 20 and 65-day moving averages in terms of volumes. So it's just one of those things I think people use as a crutch or as an excuse not to be invested, and we don't find it to be that worthwhile. So be careful about using volumes in a way that that's inconsistent with the history of the markets. I can show you plenty of points where volumes were relatively average, if not below average, and the market still did very, very well. So just be careful with that. When we look at credit, page 5, triple B spreads versus 10-year, still decent. The one area that stands out to us on page 6 are that the CDXs, when we look at CDX premiums, this is inverted in the orange line there. They have not rebounded with equity prices, just something to keep an eye on. I don't think it's a disaster, but certainly something that we'll be watching. I do believe credit's an important component to equity performance, but this is just one notch of that, but something to keep our eye on nonetheless. Page 7 shows the persistence of the dollar. This is clearly a downtrend that has a continuation to it. I do think overbought conditions should be sold. That looks to us to happen somewhere around 77, 77.5 on the DXY, but it'd be a point where we'd be willing to put on short positions. It might come as a surprise. How can the dollar look weak and the euro strong? The euro's got differing fiscal policies with a similar monetary policy that seems inconsistent. And I know, I get it. The secular trend on the dollar, the secular trend on the euro. We'll see how that lasts throughout time. But I think cyclically, what you're looking at is the differential between Portugal and Spain. People view Portugal as the sacrificial lamb. It's really a fait accompli that they'll be bailed out. The question is whether or not Spain, the sacred cow, will follow suit. And what's been interesting since December, since the euro started to rally, Spain's prospects have actually been improving. So in many ways, if you want to be short the euro, you want to see a deterioration in the prospects for Spain. And you can look at that no further than the funding costs versus the bunds. And so far, that's been contracting since its peak back in December. If that started to widen out, then we think the euro becomes a natural short. But at this point, it's premature. Things are actually improving there for the bigger economies, not in terms of their discipline, not deteriorating. So the red line here is showing the difference between funding, between Portuguese and Spanish debt versus bunds. And as it ascends, it just shows that Portuguese cost of funding is rising faster than Spain's. And with that, the euro has been strengthening. As that collapses or as it contracts, it tends to be just the opposite. So Spain, we think, is the key to the euro. And if the prospects of Spain continue to remain stable, if not actually improve, the euro probably holds relatively firm and confounds quite a few of the disbelievers in the euro. Page 9 shows Russia. The BRICS to us are important. Most of them consolidating. Russia is leading. No surprise there. On page 10, you can see that 51% of the Russian weightings are in energy, 18% in non-energy minerals. So clearly, almost 70% of the Russian index is from materials and energy, a big component there, and helping to underscore its strength. Now, when we look at page 11, clearly the earnings estimates for energy are leading the overall S&P. But I would caution people that earnings estimates tend to lag price. And I know that seems contrary to most fundamentalists, but price is the earliest indication that we've ever found in the market for predicting what's going to happen in the future. So you can get confirmation from earnings, but it tends to lag by somewhere between 1 to 6 months. And in this case, the good news is that energy is still ascending in terms of the earnings estimates, but we would not expect that earnings estimates would lead price. They've never done so in the past. With that, we'll continue to watch price as we go forward. The question on page 12 is whether or not energy is overowned. When we look at the XLE as a percentage of all sector ETFs, 24% of the market capitalization of the sector ETFs is embedded within the XLE. That's roughly a 2x weighting versus the S&P, but when we look at it versus the history of the overall this overall metric, it's still within the confines of being reasonable. Now, I don't want to make some wild claim that energy is still a contrarian call, because I don't believe that's the case. But we don't see energy being so overowned as to be a problem at this point. You can get corrections, that can happen, but in terms of people really concentrated in just energy, we don't think that that's yet the case. So we'll watch this carefully, but as you can see from page 13, we still are overweight energy. We have an 18% cap ranking versus the S&P's 13%, so we have a 5% overweight for energy. We have a 1% overweight for industrials, and that's the only other overweight we have. Everything else is neutral to slightly underweight, with financials and healthcare being the most underweight at 2% respective of the benchmark. Now, when we look at the top technically ranked names, we have a few new entrants, more new entrants, and we have deletions from the top spot: CNX, NE, Fastenal, CF, PG, Harley-Davidson, MO, ABC, and Humana all entering the list this last week. Still about 47% of these names within the top technically ranked issues are energy names, so you can see the dominance there. And then a few names dropping out: FLR, CVC, Comcast, Time Warner, CBS, TDC. These are not sells. These are names that just are no longer in the top spot. Often these names will go from ones to twos, consolidate for a while, and then resume the ones. So don't make too much of the fact that they dropped out, but they're just no longer in the top spot. But to highlight CF, which is one of the names in that's a new entry, really stands out to us as an optimal entry point. The name became oversold within a strong trend. Those are exactly the types of situations that we look for entry, and this is the one that that stands out to us here in the last week. So support of the S&P at 1256, make very, very little of the low volumes. I just statistically don't find that it's that useful. I'm more impressed that the percentage of names where they're 50 day above their 200 day is still at 91% and not diverging. This is all suggestive of a grind higher, not a surge higher, but I don't think 1375 is out of the question in the next 3 to 6 months. It's about the trends. It's not about the momentum, but I still think that that's an important characteristic for this overall overall environment. Energy is not to the point of being overowned where we think it's a liability. It's certainly not a contrarian call, but it still is showing relative strength and still showing the best chart formations consistently as a sector. For Renaissance Macro Research and Technical Analysis, this is Jeff DeGraff with a terrible head cold, signing off. Good day.